17th edition of the Roots Aviation Podcast. My name is Wesley Charnock and I'm the head of content for Roots, and I'm joined today by David Casey, our online editor.
Hi there. You join us here in snowy Quebec, where today we're recording live from Roots Americas 2019.
As part of the conference programme for the event sponsored by Air Transat, we heard from two of the figures behind Canada's new ultra-low-cost revolution.
We bring you an interview with Javier Suarez, who's the new CEO of Canada Jetlines, which is aiming to start commercial operations later this year.
We hope you enjoy this exclusive insight from Javier on the carrier's future plans and network strategy. And look out, because in the next podcast, we'll be bringing you a similar address from Stephen Greenway, the president of Swoop.
Okay, so over to Javier, who was interviewed live on stage by Michael J. Bell, who's the senior client partner at Korn Ferry.
Well, thank you for being here. We appreciate the effort. So, Javier, we've known each other for some time. In fact, I think I've placed you twice, correct?
I was going to say.
First at Viva Aerobus and now at Jetlines. So you can either thank me or hold me responsible for your experiences that way. But we appreciate you being here. Javier, we thought it might make sense maybe to set the stage for the discussion by talking a little bit about you and your background so people have an appreciation for that. And I think you have a really very unique and incredibly international background. I'll ask you to fill in some of the blanks, but from Spain originally, correct? But have worked really all over the world, in Spain, in Qatar, in the US, in Mexico, most recently as basically the chief commercial officer at Viva Aerobus, which is a very successful ultra low fare carrier, and now in Canada. What else can you tell us a little bit about your background, just to give everyone a sense of your heritage, if you will?
Sure. So, again, I think this is a little bit too loud, no? But anyway. All right. So, I've been in the airline industry for about 16 years now. I've worked for, a lot of very different airlines. I started working for an airline called Midwest Express in the U.S. It was an all business class kind of airline. Then I moved to Spain, worked for a regional airline. Then you mentioned Qatar, so I spent a couple of years in Qatar, in Doha, working for a hub and spoke kind of airline called Qatar Airways. Then I moved to Barcelona and I joined my first low-cost carrier called Vueling. When I joined the airline, the airline was only operating 37 aircraft. By the time I left 4.5 years later, the airline was operating 105. And we grew like profitably and very fast. I think the fact that we did this right after the global financial crisis gives the team double credit. And after that, you know, like somebody called Michael Bell called me in and said that there was an amazing opportunity in Mexico. There was an airline called Viva Aerobus that was really looking forward to having somebody with LCC experience growing an LCC airline. So I joined the airline 4 years, 4.5 years ago, and helped the airline move from 13 aircraft to 32 aircraft now. Somebody called Michael called me again and said there was a great opportunity in Canada to join a startup airline called Jetlines, and the rest is history. I'm here.
Well, terrific, Javier. You seem to have the magic formula. Wherever you go, there's success. So,
well, what I keep telling people that I'm a very lucky person. I'm not a good professional, but I'm lucky at least. And every airline I work for like grows, ends up growing profitably. So that's, I guess, one of the things that I bring to the table.
Talk a little bit about what happened with your moving into the CEO role at Jetlines, because that was somewhat of an unexpected development.
All right, that goes back to again, me being a very lucky person. When I met with our executive chairman, Mark Morabito, I told him again, you know, I'm a very lucky person. You know, I've worked for airlines and, you know, they all end up doing very well. And I was brought in as a chief commercial officer. The next thing you see is that the CEO leaves and I'm promoted to CEO. So that was another proof that I'm a lucky person, right?
How has that experience been? You were kind of vaulted into that position unexpectedly, but you have embraced it and run with it. Tell us about your experience of that very rapid transition to CEO, if you will.
So I love the commercial department. I love the e-commerce, the marketing, network planning, etc. I'm not spending as much time as I would love to. And I miss that part of it because we have a great team of professionals, like not many, but I mean a couple of very good people in the commercial department, and I miss spending more time with them. But then it's also an interesting experience being the CEO, being part of the fundraising and being in charge of all the stuff. So it's been an interesting experience.
And you have recently brought somebody you used to work with, correct?
Jordi Purcell? Jordi Purcell, he used to be the chief sales officer at Vueling when I was there. And you know, we brought him into Jetlines. He's now in charge of marketing, sales, and customer experience. He's doing an excellent job. Again, like very few people, like working weekends, like, you know, using all kinds of resources that we know to get the commercial department ready for us to be in operation soon.
Terrific. Well, let's shift the discussion a little bit to the Jetlines plan, of course, you guys are not yet flying, but hope to be soon. But maybe talk a little bit about why Jetlines, okay? And I maybe preface that with the backdrop that Air Canada launched Rouge, WestJet launched Swoop. We're going to talk to Stephen Greenway a little later this morning. We have Flair operating. It was announced in December, I believe, that Enerjet has now backing from some investors to move forward with its ultra-low fare carriers. So why did the investors and founders of Jetlines believe there's an opportunity for another ULCC?
Sure. Well, you know, to start with, you know, as of today, Canada is a very unique market. You know, there's no other developed market where there's only two carriers controlling 80% of the market. I mean, it's not like an LCC and a legacy airline. It's two carriers with like very high costs. So that's the, you know, the foundation of the opportunity. Then, you know, LCC penetration in the bigger countries in Europe, for example, is like higher than 50%. If you go to the US, LCC penetration is more than 30%. If you go to the other big country in North America, Mexico, you know, there's more people flying on LCCs than flying on legacy airlines. So now when people tell me, well, is the market not going to be crowded, like with all these airlines coming in? What I'm telling them is that, you know, that just having a few startups like penetrating this market with pretty much zero LCC penetration is not a threat. Now, I believe we're...
There's plenty of room.
What we're saying to investors is like, you know, assuming a 15% LCC penetration in Canada, there'll be room for at least 100 aircraft flying under this ultra-low-cost carrier model. So there's plenty of room for LCCs to grow. Now, we are much better positioned than the rest of the guys. We, you know, you'll have like Steven like talk to you later, but you know, it's Swoop is an airline within an airline, and that has limitations. We've seen them in Europe, we've seen them fail in the US. Their cost is never going to be as low as ours. That's a fact. It's a matter of time. It's already happening. But now Flair, again, it's not an LCC like ourselves, like starting from scratch, like with the right ingredients. They're transitioning from a charter airline to an LCC kind of approach. They're also having struggles. And then, you know, we've heard about Enerjet, but let's see. You know, they've been saying that they're going to be around, but and it's not happening. And they have an AOC for 737s, and now, you know, Indigo, if they're to be back in the map, you know, they're a 320 operator. So I think there's going to be like challenges for them as well. So let's see. We're just focusing on starting up our own the right way and grow rapidly so that we're the winner in this game.
Let me play devil's advocate for a minute and maybe not challenge whether there's room for more than one LCC or ULCC, but maybe the more fundamental question is there something about Canada which means why that there isn't really a big opportunity for LCC penetration? Let me tell you why I'm asking, right? So there are very few white spaces left for ULCCs around the world. You mentioned Canada. We just finished the CEO search at Flybondi in Argentina. They're really the first ULCC there. But the question I'm asking is why have those markets, Canada, Argentina, maybe a few other countries, still haven't had this? If it really was meant to be, why didn't it come until now? Is there something about Canada?
Well, it's a question that we've been asked. Like, so Canada is different, like airport taxes are too expensive, you know, Canada is very large, et cetera, et cetera. I'm like, well, it's not real. I mean, LCCs in the world operating in countries and in airports, like where airport taxes are way more expensive than Canadian taxes. So that's out of the debate. Now, what we're seeing is that there's more than 5 million people like driving, crossing the border, driving to the US to fly on US LCCs. So they're, you know, Canadians, again, you know, they're human beings. You know, if you have two options and you can fly on one of the existing carriers paying $1,000 to go to Cancun from here, and then you have an alternative which is offering you the same for 450 US dollars or Canadian dollars, then, you know, like, Canadians are going to move and start flying on LCCs. Now, why have not been an LCC in Canada in the past? I think there's been a few attempts, but when I looked into them in the past, what I saw is like they were not starting up an LCC as those that have been succeeded in the past. I mean, they either had the wrong airplane, they wanted to beat Air Canada on service, they did not have the right management. Again, if you do things well, the way you know airlines have done in Mexico or in any other part of the world, I have no doubt an LCC will work in Canada.
So there's nothing you think fundamentally different?
Absolutely nothing. You know, basically when, you know, this is a, you know, a forum for network planners, when you're working on an LCC and you start looking for like explore like route opportunities, the best scenario is the one in which there's only a legacy carrier or a couple of legacy carriers operating, because as soon as you go into the route, then you're going to be stimulating a lot of traffic. Now, if you try to find a route like this in Europe, there's not even one now. In Mexico, there were a few back 4 years ago. There's nothing now. I mean, in every single
it's
route.
It's saturated.
You know, LCCs are everywhere. Now, if you start like doing network planning in Canada, you start like evaluating routes, 100% of the routes, domestic routes, there's only legacy airlines or regional airlines. So it's like network planning paradise. So I have no doubt that there's room for an LCC and that we
so
can
not,
make
so it's not
successful.
A market characteristic, it's more attempts that have been made have been the wrong approach.
And then they challenge us about the population and how large the country is. I'm like, so how about Australia? You know, Australia is like similar population, it's also not as large, but a very large country, and then there's three LCCs in Australia. So why is Canada different? Actually, there's a unique thing about Canada, which is that there's a lot of demand in the winter due to the amazing weather, and that's again, another huge opportunity for an LCC. Because you know, LCCs in general do better with leisure traveling.
How much, if at all, has foreign ownership restrictions played into the ability of companies like Jetlines or others to raise the capital to do this kind of thing?
Yeah, I think one of the great things that I think Jetlines did in the past was kind of convincing the government that 25% foreign ownership was not enough. So it's now we were given an exception to get up to 49% foreign ownership. Now it's become a law. Any airline, you know, can bring in like up to 49% foreign ownership. That's also been preventing LCCs to launch here in Canada. That's changed, and you know that's actually helping us as we speak.
So it doesn't sound like the market is necessarily not suited for it. But what is different about Canada? You mentioned the geography, maybe the weather, but what are some of the things as you've taken your lessons learned from Spain, mm-hmm. from Mexico, from elsewhere, and brought them here that you've noticed to be different about this market and therefore causing you to change the model, if you will?
Well, again, there's a lot of low-hanging fruit. So basically, you have people in Vancouver, people in Montreal, like driving to Plattsburgh. Like all those passengers are dying for a proper LCC airline operating out of Montreal. So you know, it's actually a lot easier to make an LCC work here than in any other part of the world. I mean, there's LCCs starting up in developed countries, and there's always the challenge with the governments and, you know, markets being a little, or, you know, the country risk. That's not happening in Canada. You know, there's no country risk. The GDP is doing well. Economy is doing well. GDP per capita is also like really, really high compared to other countries. So it's actually a lot easier to make it work here in Canada than in other parts of the world. And that's actually the reason why I said yes to you. Because
right.
You know I don't like failing.
It doesn't sound like you're going to. So let's talk about the Jetlines model in particular, and realizing it's a competitive situation and maybe mm-hmm. some things you can share but some things you cannot. But tell us about the Jetlines value proposition. What is it? And how will it be similar to or different from what we see from some of the other competitors?
So we are focused on being the absolute lowest cost operator. So we are going to be the Viva Airbus of Canada, the Ryanair of Europe. We're focusing on cost. We know that that's the right model. Cost is king. It's the most important competitive advantage. And that's what we're aiming for. So basically, we're just replicating what we had at Viva. You know, low cost is key. And then, you know, there's a lot of times where airlines are tempted, management is tempted, okay, should we be adding like entertainment system? Because, you know, there's like 4-hour flights and our customers are going to be willing to watch a movie. Well, I'm sorry, but we just want to build an airline that has the absolute lowest cost per seat. And we know that passengers...
And Javier, sorry to interrupt, are you referring to your own costs or the price or both?
Well, you know, there's airlines out there like offering like very low fares, but then if your cost is not low, then you're not going to make any money, and that's not what we're here for. I mean, we're going to be the lowest cost operator, and similar to Ryanair in Europe, we also want to be the most profitable airline in Canada. And
but do you plan to be the price leader in Canada?
We're definitely going to be the price leader and also the leader in terms of profitability. If you do things right, you can achieve both. You know, if you look at Viva Airbus, the most profitable airline in Mexico, if you look at Ryanair, again, the most profitable airline in Europe, that's the... If you go to Spirit Airlines, again, same thing. You know,
so will it be sort of a base fare for transportation, unbundled, everything else, ancillaries, sort of a la carte?
Exactly. Similar to what Spirit Airlines, other airlines in the world are doing now, with a little difference. We are going to start leveraging a lot of technology. So we're going to have we're building an e-commerce platform capable of coming up with very personalized offerings to our customers. So we're not going to be offering the same to a passenger that is flying to Cancun with his family for a week than what we're offering to a passenger that is going to Toronto back and forth in a day. So the e-commerce platform we're building will allow us to come up with this kind of like personalized product and offerings, and that's going to return additional ancillary revenues for us to be the most profitable airline.
How do you plan on building the relationship with the consumer? I mean, other than these special offerings, is there something about the branding, how it's seen by customers, the experience, or what are you doing in that regard?
Well, the one thing we're seeing is that like. Regular people are not happy with the existing carriers. They know that there's not enough competition, and then like being an airline that can allow them to fly and visit their friends and family members like more often, or like to allow them actually to like go on vacation, you know, once a year by being the lowest fare airline is going to be more than enough. Now, that's pretty much what we're doing, but we want to keep them like well informed about what's going on. We're going to be a very transparent kind of airline. You know, the technology we're building is going to help us keep them informed about anything that is happening. If there's a delay for whatever the reason, they're going to be the first to know. So we're going to be like a very transparent and fair airline.
I was having an interesting discussion with an executive from Spirit Airlines the other day, and they were sharing how the new Spirit has incredibly strong operating reliability, which was not the case for years. They led on price, but people took their chances, whether they were going to get there on time, cancellations, et cetera. And they explained that basically what they've done is they've been able to pull off that with a modest reduction in utilization. Right, not a major, because the tension in an airline, of course, is you drive the assets hard, 13-hour utilization, that there's no tolerance for a mistake or bad weather or whatever. So how are you guys handling that trade-off, if you will, and how are you going to make sure that you can treat those customers right and still have the cost that you're having?
I think it is critical that the network planning department and the operations department have a really good relationship, like trust relationship. There's ways for you to achieve both. The stage length at Jetlines is not going to be as short as it is at Viva, for example, or the one that all the LCCs in Europe have. I think you can achieve both, being, you know, having like very high aircraft utilization as well as operating efficiently. So that's keeping it simple. It's you know, it's doable. I mean, airlines like Ryanair are doing it, and I believe we will be able to do the same. And then, like, you know, I think it also has to do with having, you know, like bringing in aircraft that are, if not new, like, you know, like in really good shape, you know, where like less maintenance is required. Now, the aircraft that we're bringing into our fleet, they're coming from Air New Zealand. They're going to be coming out of the maintenance shop. No maintenance has to be done. No, you know, like heavy maintenance.
You have a honeymoon period.
Exactly, for a long time. So that's going to help us get to high utilization as well.
How about culturally? You know, certain airlines have distinguished themselves on their service through employee culture, Southwest being a good example, and I'm always fascinated how people give Ryanair a lot of credit for having come around with their kinder and gentler Ryanair, but I sit back and look, well, why did you have to be nasty in the first place?
Absolutely.
Right? Yeah. It was free. Right? But tell us what you're learning from these experiences of other carriers.
Yeah, I mean, you know, as you said, I'm from Spain, and I've seen like airlines like Ryanair like being devil, even though their statistic, you know, their on-time performance and completion factor was the best, they were not nice. They're still not at the level of other airlines. I think you can do both. I mean, like smiling does not cost you anything. So we're building that culture in which pilots, cabin crew members are part of the same family. And if you treat them well and if you make sure they know they're the first, they're going to treat your customers as well. So I think, you know, like...
What do you think is really at the core of that? If you're in a unique position here, you don't have the employees on board yet, et cetera. So what is it that you're trying to do to make sure that the kind of people you select, how you train them, et cetera, allows you to pull that off again?
So there's, you know, like the biggest group is cabin crew members and pilots. Now, we're not going to pay pilots and cabin crew members as much as other airlines. I mean, you know, we're not Air Canada. We're not going to pay them $200,000 or whatever they're paying them. The one thing we're offering them is they're going to be joining an airline that's going to treat them like very respectfully. And then there's a few things that our model has that other airlines cannot offer them. For example, you know, our pilots and cabin crew members know that they're going to be flying somewhere, but they're going to be back home every night. So they're going to be able to be with their families every day. And that's, you know, if you start working for a legacy airline, most likely you're going to, you know, like leave your base on a Monday and being back on Thursday. So that's not going to happen on
Jetlines. Quality of life.
Quality of life is definitely one. Now, we've been asked about, like, you know, pilot shortages. And basically, you know, we have received a lot of, like, resumes from first officers. What first officers know is that, you know, by joining a startup airline, you know, they're going to be moving to the left seat pretty quickly. So there's a career opportunity as well. And that does not only apply to pilots and cabin crew members, who will also be promoted, but then for the rest of the team, you know, they join a startup and there's going to be a lot of career opportunities.
So let's talk about network, your network, because it wouldn't be appropriate to ignore that subject at the network event, right? So, you know, you mentioned there's a lot of low-hanging fruit that pretty much every major route in Canada, either within or maybe from Canada to the U.S., mm-hmm. has a pricing opportunity due to the high fares. But what is going to be the route network, at least initially, for Jetlines? And ask that, you know, you've seen maybe Swoop come in and maybe start operations in a few places you guys had originally intended, et cetera. So tell us about that for the benefit of everyone here.
So, yeah, the previous management team announced we were going to be using Hamilton as our first base. I really believe Hamilton is a great opportunity. Now that we see them going into exactly the same kind of routes that we intended to operate, we've been forced to make a change. What we're doing now, and we announced last week, is that we're going to start up in Vancouver International Airport. It's a great airport. It's an airport with the one of the lowest in-plane costs per passenger within the main airports in Canada. So we are doing this because we want to avoid competing with Swoop. We don't believe Swoop is going to be like jumping into Vancouver, because that would be cannibalizing a WestJet operation. So, and again, this is a reaction, because we don't want to tap into a similar situation that the one Flair has at this point. You know, they announce routes and they get Swoop on top and, you know, lowering fares. We don't want to go into
There's enough room in the market, but don't start the fight immediately.
Right? Yeah. I think, you know, proper LCCs, like, again, like going back to Ryanair or any LCC in Europe, pretty much, they started operating out of secondary airports and they moved into primary airports and they proved that to be successful. That's what we did at Vueling. We are going to start out of a primary airport, but like in the long term, you know, we're going to be flying to secondary airports as well. We just now need to avoid competing with Swoop directly because we do not have their financial muscle. And again, we want to avoid having a similar situation to the one Flair is having at this point, you know, having them all over and lowering fares.
Is the focus going to be domestic and then international? If you look at your website, you see international destinations there.
Yeah,
on the map,
we need to update our network plan in our website. We're just not giving our competitors enough information, because you know, we've seen what happens when you're transparent. Mm-hmm. But yes, we are going to be operating like domestically year round, and then we're also going to be flying international. We're going to be flying to the US, flying to Mexico and the Caribbean in the winter. Some of these US routes, Mexican routes, you can maybe maintain them in the summer as well.
I guess you know the Mexican market pretty well.
Yes, I do. It's been like 4 years like working with Mexican airports. I'm hoping to see some of them here, but yeah, I know the Mexican market pretty well.
Well, what would you say to Gaetien, Quebec City? We're sitting and they have a brand new beautiful terminal here. What are the prospects for Jetline service to Quebec City?
Yeah, well, you know, we've been talking for the last, I think, 2 months. You know, we were excited about Quebec. It's one of these very underserved markets, and we're gonna have a good partner here, and we're gonna give people in Quebec City like the kind of a capacity that they need for them to receive like the tourism they deserve, as well as to provide them with low fares that they need for them to like visit their friends and family and go on a vacation. It's a very promising market.
I would think there's a big opportunity from the U.S. to come to Quebec City for tourism in certain times
Absolutely.
Of the year. And at the Chateau Frontenac, I'm just continuing running into Americans up here for Carnival and in the summer as well. So that maybe it must be an opportunity for you.
Absolutely. I mean, we got here pretty late last night. I think it was at 1 a.m. and it was snowing like never before I've seen. And but I could tell it's beautiful. It's an amazing city. Looking forward to spending some time here. Yeah.
All right, terrific. Tell us where you are on your path to launch. What is the expected launch? I know that may be a moving target, but what are we looking at?
Yeah, well, you know, the aircrafts that we're going to be receiving, you know, will be delivered soon. Again, you know, I can't really share the exact date for us to launch, but I mean, you know, looking forward to launching this year for sure. And we're getting ready operationally, you know, working with the Canadian authorities, working with Transport Canada, with CTA, and making sure that we have everything needed for us to get the AOC. Commercially, again, you know, there's a few people, you know, we have Jordi, and we have our e-commerce director, you know, like building the systems. We are, you know, very close to being totally ready to launch operations, so that's... It's all happening. I mean, the good thing about the team that we're putting together is that we know exactly what we want to achieve. So we're not saying, oh, should we be doing this or that? No, we really know.
You
know,
what
are those? What are those things that are critical for us to be successful?
What is on your critical path? I mean, of course, funding must be part of it, right?
Funding is definitely one. You know, we're meeting with a lot of investors, and you know, we're optimistic about like our ability to raise the money, but then again, the rest is pretty much under control. We, you know, the biggest challenge, if you will, other than raising the money, will be to hire the right people. You know, we are going to need to hire like a lot of people in a very short period of time. We want to make sure that, you know, we bring in the right people, because airlines, it you know, the opportunity is an important factor for an airline to do well. But we've seen like, you know, incredible market opportunities with like bad teams not being successful. I was actually in Houston a few months ago, and I was asking somebody at Aerolandia, how is it that you guys are not doing better at Colombia? He's like, well, it's difficult for us to bring the right talent into our office, and that's actually one of the amazing things about being based in Vancouver. Like, no matter who I talk to, when I tell them, you know, they ask, so what are you guys based? I'm like, well, we're in Vancouver. Like, they're like, great. I mean, you know, just Google it. I mean, like, Vancouver quality of life, it's top five every year. So that's a big asset for us.
Has it made life complicated that you're a public company already, or is that sort of a irrelevant issue?
It's, you know, you need to look into it, and then, you know, there's some procedures that you need to follow, and being transparent with shareholders, which we're totally okay with. It's not a big challenge at all. I mean, there's bigger challenges. Launching the airline, you know, as I was saying before, like launching an airline is a challenge. Launching an airline without having all the funding is a double challenge, because you need to be doing both things in parallel. But I, you know, we're managing well.
Hope you're writing notes to keeping notes to write your book on this.
Yes.
Javier, you've as you mentioned, worked with not just many airlines, but many business models: full service, regional, LCC, hybrid, etc. As you embark on this process, what are some of the biggest lessons learned for what to do and what not to do, and how are you applying those today in your context of JetLine?
I think nothing has really changed other than the fact that you need to have like the right management team, you know, the right board of directors. One of the things that I got excited about when we started talking about JetLines is that, you know, our board of directors, you know, it's so amazing that, like, you know, I don't think any other Canadian airline, you know, has similar board of directors. We have people like, you know, Tony, who used to be the chief operating officer for Spirit Airlines. We have Sat, who used to be chief commercial officer for EasyJet and then became like a CEO for Flybe. We also have like Alan Bird, who I actually brought into the board, who used to be like Viva Airbus CFO. He was also CFO for Tiger Airways, then part of the team who took the airline IPO. So it's having that team of people who are going to make sure shareholders understand that, you know, the vision and the strategy of the airline is going to be the one that is going to take them to a successful operation.
Yeah, I'd urge people to look at the website, and it's a powerful board. I mean, you've got a great group of people there with some amazing institutional knowledge, and not to mention, of course, your executive chairman, Mark Morabito, who is a force of personality and doesn't take no for an answer.
Yeah. He's a tough guy. You know, execution-wise, he's like I've never seen anybody like him before. He's adding a lot of value to the airline as well, absolutely. That's actually one of the reasons why I joined, because, you know, he's got a lot of experience raising money for other companies, and he's very, you know, he doesn't take no as an answer. He keeps fighting no matter what. He's not going to give up.
So other than raising the money, as you put your head on the pillow at night, what keeps you up?
I've said this before, and it's my two-year-old twins. Those are the ones that keep me awake. I go to bed.
That is a surmountable problem.
Yeah, and you know it's not you know two aircrafts that are giving you a hard time. You cannot get rid of them. But you know the rest. You know I'm. You know we're working really hard, and you know by the time I go to bed, you know I don't have much stuff in my mind. It is true that sometimes when I wake up, you know, I'm constantly looking for emails that are coming from all over the world, like, you know, people from Asia emailing, like other people from Europe. So sometimes it's difficult to go back to sleep when you're awake. But I mean, you know, I'm confident that we're doing what is needed for us to be successful, and the right team is coming. There's a lot of people that are willing to join our airline, and I'm pretty confident. I'm good.
You're feeling robust.
I'm feeling good.
If we fast forward the film 3 years from now, Javier, and everything has gone as you plan, what does this picture look like? Tell us what JetLines looks like at that point in time.
Well, by that time, like, people have realized that there was clearly a great opportunity for an LCC in Canada. You will see JetLines flying, you know, like all across Canada. Very successful in every single market we tap into, because, you know, again, you know, if there's something that I can add to the table, is like, you know, network planning, launching routes experience. I've launched more than 300 routes in my career, and I think, you know, you're not going to see an airline, you know, jumping into a market and then like pulling routes. You know, we have enough experience so that, you know, if we commit to an airport and we make a promise, we keep the promises. So you'll see JetLines pretty much everywhere, and then like people being happy. We're not going to be like a perfect airline. You know, there'll be delays, and people are not always going to be happy, but they will know that, you know, there's an airline that is transparent and fair to customers.
And
exactly. Yeah, we're gonna be good to people, and proving to them that there's nothing wrong in Canada. The airports are not as expensive as people say they are, and there's a lot of rumors about Canada being different. I mean, you know, it's. You know, I've seen it like twice. I saw it at Vueling in Spain. You know, again, you know, people, well, you know, Ryanair, Vueling, is it going to be successful? And all of a sudden, you see like an airline like Vueling flying from Barcelona to 150 different destinations nonstop. And I'm sure we can do the same in Canada. You know, there's going to be a lot more tourism, and people are going to be free to travel.
So if we did fast forward the film to 5 years from now, and well, with all these new entrants in the market, who do you think is going to be left standing here in this market, if you will?
I don't think
in the LCC.
Yeah, I don't think Flair is going to be around. I have doubts that, you know, you know, WestJet is going to maintain Swoop for a long time. Because, I mean, they can. They have the financial muscle to do it, but I think...
We're going to ask Stephen Greenway in a few minutes.
He's a great guy. He's a nice guy, and he's got good experience as well, but he also... He's not going to tell you, but he understands that, like, an airline within an airline has limitations. So, and the more we grow, the faster we grow, the more trouble they're going to be in. And you know, we, you know, with Lyft is, when I was at Vueling, you know, we competed with LCCs, you know, every airline has had an LCC at one point, and they're going to struggle because we're not going to make their life easy. So whether they have an airline like Bruges or not, it's fine. You know, it's not, we don't consider them an ultra low cost carrier. And at one point, I think they're going to realize that there's nothing they can do to prevent us from growing. So I guess they're going to focus more on WestJet kind of passengers, which is, by the way, a big challenge they have now. They're moving into Air Canada space, and you know, they're gonna have to make a call. I mean, make a strategic decisions, because it's difficult for them to like tap into every single passenger segment.
We hope you enjoyed that podcast, and don't forget, there's lots more on the Roots Aviation channel on iTunes.
Thanks very much for listening. See you next time. Goodbye.